Welcome into You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with Veritas Medical. Of course, check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Of course, along the way, phone lines will be open at all times, 745-5800. Text line available, 806-745-5800 on today's broadcast. You can always call the office at 1-855-6-VERITAS. And again, check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Let me say good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards, MD. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade. How are you today?
I'm doing well. And health coach Melody Wilkes here on the show.
Hello.
And we have a special guest via telephone today, which is going to be a great show.
Yes, I am very excited. We have Dr. Stephanie Seneff with us today. And Dr. Seneff is a senior research scientist at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory in Cambridge, Massachusetts, USA. Dr. Seneff has a BS degree, her undergrad degree from MIT in biology, PhD from MIT in electrical engineering and computer science. Her recent interests have focused on the role of toxic chemicals and micronutrient deficiencies in health and disease, with a special emphasis on the pervasive herbicide Roundup and the mineral sulfur. She has authored over 24 peer-reviewed journal papers over the past few years on these topics. And I was excited when Dr. Seneff agreed to come on the show today because, as we talk about every week, the body's designed beautifully. It's an intricate, amazingly designed piece of machinery, if you want to call it that. So it will function normally unless it doesn't have what it needs. And usually that's a micronutrient of some sort and a peaceful state of mind. Or if there's something in your physiology disrupting normal function. And we totally get this. I talk about it all the time with our tractors and our trucks. All these farmers out here understand you've got to give your vehicle what it needs to perform optimally, and don't put stuff in your vehicle that it doesn't need. You'd never put honey in the gas tank or it won't work right. It's that basic concept. And so when we look at this explosion of disease across our American population the past 50, 60 years, it's not genetics. We've talked about that clearly over and over and over. This is too short of a time frame for genetics to alter and change. So if it's not genetics, what is it? It's our environment. There's some environmental factor, some environmental toxin oftentimes that's in our body that's disrupting normal physiology. So that's why I've asked Dr. Seneff to come on today, because her research over the years is starting to delineate out and explain how all of this happens. So we're really excited to have Dr. Seneff. Welcome, Dr. Seneff. Thank you for joining us today.
Delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, I'd like to jump right in. People may think, wow, when they heard that intro, they think, well, how did Dr. Seneff get into, you know, medical type of topics when her degree's in electrical engineering, computer science? So kind of talk about that first, Dr. Seneff, how you, I mean, you did have the biology undergrad and even I think some nutrition as a minor, but right. Computer science was your PhD. So kind of where, how did you end up where you are today talking about stuff like glyphosate and gut dysbiosis and leaky gut and autism and all this stuff?
It has been an incredible transformation in my career over the past about 10 years now that I've been working in biology and medicine. Before that, I was developing spoken dialogue systems that would allow you to carry on a conversation with a computer, usually where the computer has access to information sources that it's providing you with, sort of like a precursor to Siri. I'm pleased that that technology has taken off and actually become commercial. But 10 years ago, I got really worried because I saw that the autism rates were going up exponentially, and exponential growth is extremely scary. And so I made that prediction. I made a prediction that initially I estimated that it would be 2025 when we'd have half the kids born on the spectrum. When I did the math accurately, it turned out to be 2032. So we've got another 7-year reprieve before we hit that horrible goal of 80% of the boys, 50% of the children born ending up on the autism spectrum. And wow, we're not doing anything to fix that problem right now. In fact, we're continuing to make worse the environmental factors that are causing it, in my opinion. So I expect it to happen unless we do something drastic soon. So I feel we're in an absolute emergency right now in this country, and people need to wake up.
Right. Yeah, I agree 100%. So as you started seeing some of this stuff 10 years ago or so, and you started using your computer science skills to draw some correlations. And before we start talking about correlation, causation, I want to tell the audience, just so they can kind of understand what we're talking about. When we talk about correlation, that's kind of like saying, you know, we notice that people who die from drowning also are the ones that eat a lot of ice cream. And so, you know, ice cream obviously doesn't cause drowning. They're correlated, but they're not. It's not causative. You know, more people eat ice cream in the summer, and that's when people swim. So, you know, you can get a little mixed up when you talk about correlation versus causation. So correlation's cool to look at. You can kind of see, well, something's correlated, but does it actually cause it? You know, ice cream doesn't cause drowning, but although there's this correlation, it's not causation. But then as you see correlation, you dive down and start studying. You get into the science. You get into the mechanisms of these different things and see, is there actual physiologic biochemical reason that something would cause something? So that's a little background on correlation causation. So talk about initially what you saw with correlation, and wasn't it with cholesterol and statin drugs, I think?
Right. Well, yes. I mean, cholesterol and heart disease is actually not nearly as correlated as they claim. I mean, they love the statin drugs, and they know the statins can knock your cholesterol down. So they want you to believe that high cholesterol is causing the heart disease, but that's not actually true. It's actually not very well correlated. And in fact, the elevation, serum LDL, that's the so-called bad cholesterol, has been going up in the population. If you look at the statistics, which I have, of the hospital discharge data where they report various conditions that people have upon discharge from the hospital, and you can look over time and you can see that the report of serum LDL is going up over time, in step with the increased use of glyphosate on core crops. So it's correlated with the glyphosate, but it's not correlated with the heart disease. When you look at the heart attack, the heart disease numbers are going down while the LDL is going up. So they're not correlated at all, you know?
Mm, yeah.
Even though they claim they are. So it's really
totally opposite.
And there's also, I liked your example of the ice cream. It's an excellent example. Another example is Zika virus. You know, we're like obsessed on Zika. They want to give us a vaccine. They're trying to get, you know, put the fear of God in us that we're going to get, our kids are going to get microcephaly if we get bit by a mosquito.
Right.
And, you know, there's correlation. You find a certain correlation that some of the people who have the microcephaly in Brazil, in northeast Brazil, where there's this epidemic, have the Zika virus contamination. But again, correlation doesn't necessarily mean causation. And they think in that case, of course, it's causation. They can't think of anything else, even though there's a huge number of toxins that those people are exposed to in northeast Brazil. It's as if that they're ignoring all of that and zeroing in on the Zika virus, you know, which could just be happenstance. I mean, the Zika could be an innocent bystander.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's very interesting. And, of course, there's a lot of pushback on my correlations. I've shown incredible. First of all, it's alarming that all these diseases are going up. There's Alzheimer's, thyroid cancer, pancreatic cancer, and diabetes, obesity, autism, you know, all these pretty miserable diseases are going up dramatically. And all these gut problems that people are having, celiac disease and inflammatory gut, you know, all of these problems that people are having are going up dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all going up dramatically in step with the rise in the use of glyphosate. Glyphosate is going up exponentially. We're using more and more every year because of the resistance that's showing up in the weeds among the glyphosate-resistant crops. It's really been a complete disaster. The idea of inserting a bacterial gene into a crop in order to make the crop resistant to glyphosate and then allowing it to be sprayed all over the crop, which means it goes into the food chain. And then at the same time, you use so much of it that the weeds become resistant. And then now you're stuck with using more and more. I mean, we're really in a terrible war with the weeds that we're losing. And at the same time, we're poisoning the entire population.
Right. Yeah. And I just want to remind our listeners, glyphosate's the primary ingredient in Roundup. So you say there's a correlation between the glyphosate uses. It's been going up in our population. Heart disease has been going up, too. LDL, however, has been coming down.
No, LDL's been going up, and actually heart disease has been going down.
Okay.
At least in this hospital discharge data. Now, you have to be, I mean, you know, general population, I'm not so sure. But in this data that I looked at, it was inversely correlated with the LDL in that same data.
Okay.
LDL was going up, and heart disease was going down.
Okay, gotcha. Talk a little bit about what the statins do from a disruption in normal physiology. Why do we need cholesterol? And what's happening is we block that cholesterol production with the statin.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I from the get-go, I've never thought that statins could possibly be good, and I've done a lot of research on statin drugs. And cholesterol is vital to the body's health. It's really one of the things that distinguishes animals from plants. I mean, you know, plants have chlorophyll. We know plants have chlorophyll, animals don't. And that gives them the opportunity to take inorganic carbon and make organic matter out of it, so they can produce, you know, food, really, mm-hmm. from the sunlight, which is really special. Animals have cholesterol, which I think is kind of the analogy of the chlorophyll that the plants have. It gives us mobility, and it gives us a brain and a nervous system, which the plants don't have. And those are really important things that animals have that you don't want to mess with. So when you start depriving the brain and the muscles of cholesterol, you end up with all kinds of issues with muscle aches and pains, muscle weakness, brain fog, you know, and then erratic behaviors like, you know, uncontrollable rage and things like that. There's just a lot of things that are symptoms of statin drug therapy,
right,
that are directly connected to the cholesterol deficiency problem that it induces.
Yeah. So as you bring in a statin, it blocks the cholesterol production pathway, and then I've heard you talk about another pathway that it blocks, the mevalonate pathway. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, well, it actually cuts off this really critical pathway, biological pathway, at its base, and that pathway produces the both the cholesterol, but also it produces a bunch of other really interesting biologically active molecules. Molecules that are involved with escorting signaling molecules to the membrane, so that the cell basically can't signal anymore. Its signaling mechanisms get shut down because of statin drug exposure, and so it is the mevalonate pathway that it's called. But it has a whole bunch of branches, and of course, cholesterol is also the precursor to vitamin D, or vitamin D and cholesterol come from the same precursor. Mm-hmm. And vitamin D deficiency is an epidemic in our society today, and in part, I suspect the statin drugs are contributing to that.
Yeah, well, and one thing I'd like you to expand on the vitamin D. I've been asked this question recently about taking a vitamin D supplement versus getting vitamin D from the sun. I always lean towards, you know, the most natural way to do things, the way God basically designed it. When you get sun exposure to the skin and you produce vitamin D, I'm assuming there's other things you produce, but you talk about vitamin D sulfate. Can you go into the difference between vitamin D in a pill versus sunshine-induced vitamin D production?
Right. I mean, I actually, I have been steadfast in my claim that vitamin D supplements are a bad idea. Now, I can't say I've unconditionally proven that, but that's my instinct, that it's a bad idea to take vitamin D supplements. And the reason for that is because when you go out in the sun and you get exposed to sunlight, your body not only produces vitamin D sulfate, but it also produces cholesterol sulfate. The sunlight triggers the synthesis of sulfate, and the sulfate is combined with both vitamin D and cholesterol. And I believe that cholesterol sulfate deficiency is a major driver behind heart disease and many other diseases, autism as well. Many of the diseases that we're suffering from today, I believe, can be traced back to cholesterol sulfate deficiency. So when you take a vitamin D supplement, you're not taking cholesterol sulfate. You're only taking vitamin D. You're getting it out of context. When you produce the vitamin D naturally, you're also producing the cholesterol sulfate. And the cholesterol sulfate is able to deliver both cholesterol and sulfate to all the tissues of the body without having to produce an LDL particle. So you're going to lower your, you know, these so-called bad LDL, you're going to lower the levels of that naturally, because you're going to be able to ship around cholesterol outside of those particles because of that sulfation. It makes the cholesterol water soluble. But
right.
The cholesterol is also carrying the sulfate, so each of them is helping the other one to get delivered to the tissues. It's really a beautiful system.
Yeah, it's amazing. So just to summarize what Dr. Sinef was just saying, cholesterol by itself can't float around in your blood very well. Your blood's mostly water. But when you put the sulfate onto the cholesterol, now all of a sudden it's water soluble, so it can be transported around in the blood to all the cells of your body that need it, that need the cholesterol and need the sulfate. So if you don't have the sulfate part, then your liver has to make LDL to plug onto that cholesterol molecule to make it water soluble to float around in your bloodstream. So when you don't have the sulfate because you don't have the sunshine, then your liver starts to make a lot more LDL to transport that cholesterol around.
Can I ask kind of a practical question. Like what time of day, how long, how often should you be in the sun? Is it like better to be in the mornings, in the afternoon? Are we talking 30 minutes, 15 minutes? Should we do it every day, every other day?
I mean, I don't know the exact numbers. My personal opinion is that in today's lifestyle, it's hard to get too much. So I would encourage people to get out in the sun whenever they can. I personally drive, all my cars are convertibles. You know, I only drive a convertible car. And whenever it's a sunny day, I have the top down when I'm driving, because that's a great way. You can get sunlight. If you have like a 40-minute commute, you get 40 minutes of sunlight just by driving in the car. And I take a walk outside at noontime if it's a sunny day. You know, I really like to take advantage of the sun and get outside. So I'm sort of always looking for it. Of course, I'm busy, so you have to really grab it when you can. And I think most of us are very busy. I don't worry about too much. I mean, I think as long as you get a tan, the trick is to develop a tan slowly in the spring so that when the summer comes along, your tan is going to be a much better protection from UV rays than sunscreen would ever be. Sunscreen contains, the high-end sunscreens contain aluminum as a, the aluminum is added to the mix in order to make it more palatable. So it's not like this white, sticky stuff. It becomes like a nice cream, you know, that's transparent. They add the aluminum as an emulsifier for the zinc oxide and the titanium dioxide, which are active ingredients in the sunscreen. But all of that, so the aluminum is going to be absorbed into your skin. And ironically, aluminum actually disrupts the synthesis of cholesterol sulfate. So I suspect, and of course, the sunscreen is also blocking the body's ability to make the vitamin D. So when you're using sunscreen, you're not only preventing yourself from making vitamin D, you're also preventing yourself from making cholesterol sulfate. And you're making the situation worse with respect to your own body's natural ability to protect itself from the UV rays.
Do you have any advice for those of us who are redheaded and fair-skinned that burn, like, really easily?
What I tell my patients is, kind of like Dr. Seneff, in the spring, start out, you know, titrate it up. Start out with a little bit and get a little more, a little more, a little more. I mean, when your skin starts to barely turn pink, that's telling you you're about to burn, then that's the time to get out of the sun. Not go put sunscreen on, but just go get some shade and just kind of daily get a little more. So by the time full-blown summer gets here, you'll be more likely to tan. But if you have to use something, we'll get Dr. Seneff's opinion on this, but just a zinc oxide-based, you know, kind of healthier sunscreen with no other ingredients in it, just zinc oxide by itself, if you have to put something on. But I'd prefer you just find some shade, but slowly titrating up, get 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, and over time build up. And I think also as your diet improves, you get more polyphenols, all those plant-based chemicals we always talk about. You have more vitamin A and more vitamin C from the diet, not from necessarily supplementation. But as you boost your body's stores of all these plant-based chemicals, you're able to naturally avoid the sunburn even more.
That's a very good point.
I have a really probably silly question, but
there's no such thing as a silly question.
Well, this might be.
Okay.
I've always heard that the sun is what really ages you. So if you're out in the sun a lot and you don't want to get wrinkles, or does it cause wrinkles?
I know. I am aware of that, too. And, in fact, they often put sunscreen in the facial creams, which I find really horrific, because the face is one of the best ways to get sunlight exposure during the wintertime. If you're using a sunscreen on your face, you know, then forget that, right? So I personally don't buy that. I don't buy that argument that the sun causes wrinkles. I think it's a gimmick that they've used in order to be able to market their product.
Wow. I always say the skin is just a window into the gut. So if your gut's healthy, you've got good gut flora, you don't, you're eating organic food, you have all the polyphenols we're talking about, a lot of plant-based foods, good healthy fats instead of the inflammatory fats. I mean, if you're not inflamed internally, your skin will be less inflamed externally, is how I look at it. So I'm kind of...
I agree with you. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, I'm with Dr. Seneff on that. I want to go back to taking vitamin D orally. You're missing out on the sulfate. So sulfate comes from sunshine. Is there another place to get sulfated products? And I know we talked about sulfated cholesterol, sulfated D. I know there's other things in the body that need to be sulfated. So is sunshine the primary way to get the sulfate, or is there a dietary way to do that?
Well, yeah, first of all, it's just getting the sulfur. And one of the problems is that we have a sulfur deficiency in our diet today. And one of the reasons is glyphosate, because glyphosate, and Don Huber is the person who turned me on to glyphosate. He's a retired professor from Purdue.
Yeah, we've had Dr. Huber on before. He's a great wealth of knowledge.
He's a wonderful person. I so admire him. And I still learn things from him every day. He and I are in constant communication. Let's see, where was I going with that? Don Huber.
The sulfate, glyphosate blocks sulfur.
Yeah, glyphosate, he's shown that the sulfur in the plants goes way down when they're exposed to glyphosate. Glyphosate prevents the plants from taking up the sulfur from the soil. Mm. So that means that all of your, your dietary, if you're trying to get sulfur from plant-based foods, you're not going to do well because of the glyphosate exposure, that the foods are going to be depleted in sulfur. So number one is you don't have enough sulfur. Number two is, it's really interesting, and I have deeply studied sulfate. I actually was studying sulfate long before I learned about glyphosate, and I was aware of sulfate deficiency as a factor in both heart disease and autism, which were the two big diseases that I studied first when I first started on this adventure 10 years ago. And it became very clear to me that both of those diseases can be explained by severe sulfate deficiency. And sulfate is so fascinating because it's an incredibly important molecule in all the cells. And they stick sulfate into their extracellular matrix. So around the exterior of the cell is this big matrix of these sugar chains, all these complicated sugar chains, and they've got sulfates attached to them. And those sulfates are very, very important. They're very important lining the vessel wall in the blood vessels for maintaining healthy blood flow. And they're also very important because the cell actually nibbles on that sulfate, on those sulfated sugars in between meals. It's like a between-meal snack, that the cell takes in those sulfated sugars that it hung outside in its matrix. It takes them in and it digests them along with things like LDL particles. It can actually, and also cellular debris, so it can clear damaged tissue. You know, you just have sort of damaged molecules from the process of living, and you need to recycle them. And so they have these, the cells have these engines inside them called lysosomes that are like the cell's digestive system. Mm-hmm. And the lysosome needs the sulfate in order to be able to digest and break down the debris, including, for example, viruses. So the immune cells can clear viruses if they have sulfate, because the sulfate provides a buffering for the acidic environment that's needed in the lysosome to break down cellular debris. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So you've got to have sulfur to keep the external cellular environment cleaned up. You also need the sulfur to keep your blood vessels smooth and clean.
Exactly. And so, but what's really, really interesting is that sulfate is extremely difficult to transport because it will gel the blood. So sulfate actually forms a nice, slick, jello layer along the interior of the blood vessel, which makes the red blood cells slide right through the capillaries, no problem. You know, it's got very, like sliding down a slide, very easy, as long as there's plenty of sulfate, because it changes the water into jello, essentially. But you can't just throw the sulfate out into the blood, because it'll change the blood into water, into jello, which would be really bad because you'll have a no-flow situation.
Right.
So it's tricky to transport sulfate. And the body then has come up with all these special molecules that are sulfated in transit. And cholesterol is one of them. Cholesterol sulfate, vitamin D sulfate, vitamin C sulfate. You have some of these nutrients like resveratrol and curcumin. You know, curcumin is such a fantastic spice. Lots of people have talked about how wonderful it is, how healthy it is. Curcumin is sulfated in transit. So all of these wonderful molecules that are so healthy for us, the polyphenols you mentioned earlier, the flavonoids, all of them, and also all these neurotransmitters like dopamine and serotonin, melatonin, they're all sulfated in transit. And DHEA is sterile, hormones like testosterone and estrogen and this DHEA sulfate, they're all sulfated.
Wow.
So they're all carrying sulfate around, and glyphosate disrupts all of them. Glyphosate disrupts the sulfation process as well as the source, like the polyphenols. The aromatic amino acids, which are the precursors to the neurotransmitters, come from the pathway that glyphosate disrupts in the gut.
Okay.
The gut microbes make those amino acids then become sulfated.
I'm sorry, we got a question texting in, and I really want to focus on that, what you just said, the microbes in the gut and that pathway being blocked. Let's get this question real quick.
Yeah, we'll get the question, then we'd have to take a quick break. But,
okay.
Doctor, does iodine help fair-skinned people not to get sunburn? They've heard this before. Iodine.
Iodine. I don't know that I've heard that. I'm not saying yes or no. Do you know, the answer to that, Dr.
I don't know. I'm afraid to answer one way or the other. I have to look into that. I'll have to get back to you on that one because I don't know.
Well, I hope to have Dr. Brownstein on later this summer, and he's kind of the iodine expert.
Know.
So we'll save that question.
Oh, he will. Okay, good. Yep.
All right, we need a quick break.
Yeah, we'll take a quick break. We'll come right back. Stick around. We got plenty to go. Real quick, and more with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, and special guest, Dr. Stephanie Seneff, right here on the show. Welcome back to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, of course, and our number at the clinic, 1-855-6-VERITAS, located right here at 1802 East 50th Street, right here in Lubbock. But again, the website, veritasmedical.com. Of course, our guest this morning on You're the Cure, Dr. Stephanie Seneff, here on the show.
Yeah, I want to go right back to where we left it, where I had to rudely interrupt. Sorry about that. On the shikimate pathway. So what this is, glyphosate we've been talking about, that's the main ingredient in Roundup. It does a lot of things, but one of the things it does is block the shikimate pathway. And the producers of glyphosate, Monsanto, got approval to spray this chemical on our food because the human body doesn't have the shikimate pathway, so therefore it'd be safe for us to consume it. Thinking, and it's true, the human cells don't have, human physiology does not have that pathway, but plants have that pathway, but more importantly, bacteria, specifically the bacteria in our gut. And we've talked about this before, how there's 10 times more of those guys than there are our own human cells, and that these bugs in the gut do a tremendous amount of things for our physiology. They produce things for our body to work right. So this pathway that these gut bacteria have is blocked by glyphosate. But Dr. Seneff, I'll let you take it from there, what those bugs do as far as those neurotransmitters.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing because that pathway produces the aromatic amino acids, tryptophan, tyrosine, and phenylalanine. And those aromatic amino acids are precursors to all the neurotransmitters, dopamine, serotonin, also thyroid hormone, and then also melatonin. Melanin is the skin tanning agent. So if you've got glyphosate, for example, you're going to have a hard time producing melanin, which means it'll be hard to tan, which means sunlight will be dangerous for you. So glyphosate is actually setting us up to not have our natural protection from the sun, which is really scary in itself. But all those neurotransmitters, are disrupted.
Right.
The supply is disrupted. And serotonin, of course, is very important in the gut for the digestive process.
But is the glyphosate, doctor, the main fundamental root cause, let's say, of melanoma, skin cancer stuff, where the body's, you're getting the sunlight out there, and then, you end up with these funny looking splotches and stuff like that because you think, well, I've been in the sun. I for one, never use sunscreen ever, and I tan relatively easy, but also look out over the years and think, well, I got a blotch here and there that maybe I ought to look at or get checked out, that kind of deal. And maybe too much sun exposure, could cause that issue. But where's the correlation between skin cancer, I guess, and glyphosate, if there is one? Is there anything on that end of it?
I mean, I think there is. And I think that because of these aromatic amino acids being disrupted and not having an adequate supply, and of them and also of those derivatives such as melanin, tryptophan also plays an important role in dealing with sunlight. We have natural molecules in our skin that are able to detox. In fact, the UV light in the sunlight is used to make the sulfate by this enzyme called enose. And enose is a member of a class of enzymes called cytochrome P450 enzymes, which are known to be disrupted by glyphosate. So what happens is that the natural way in which the body's able to grab that superoxide that's produced through the UV light and make good use of it to make sulfate, that system is disrupted by glyphosate. And instead, the superoxide gets loose and starts causing, DNA damage and ending up with cancer. So it's actually interesting when you look at the melanoma cancer is actually another epidemic that's, it's going up dramatically in step with a dramatic rise in glyphosate. And despite the fact that we're buying huge amounts more high-end, and much higher level coverage sunscreen that goes up to SPF, sun protection factor of like 65, these ridiculously high numbers. Back when I was a kid, you wouldn't even see 14, you know. It was just like 8 or 10. That was already considered really high-end sunscreen. Mm-hmm. And now we've got these incredibly, you know, effective sunscreens that totally block the UV light. I think it's really interesting that despite all that increased use of sunscreen, or perhaps because of it, because the sunscreen itself may be causing increased risk to sun cancer because of the aluminum in it. So, because the aluminum also disrupts the enzyme that makes the sulfate, and so therefore the superoxide just gets loose and starts causing trouble. You know, so we're, because of the poisons in our environment, including what's in the sunscreen, but especially the glyphosate, we're now no longer able to make use of the sun the way we should. And instead, the sun becomes toxic.
Yeah. So, I mean, a point I want to make here is Dr. Seneff just delineated out multiple different mechanisms and pathways that glyphosate could disrupt. So these are protective pathways that the body has naturally in place, that, like for skin cancer, that are totally disrupted. So it's not like glyphosate's just doing one thing. It's doing a whole host of things, and then the cascade effect of that is even multiplied even more. So it's just so across the board destructive. And if you just bring common sense into the picture here too, which a lot of times scientists and doctors don't, unfortunately, but 100 years ago, everybody was outside. We were growing crops outside. We were horse and buggy. We were washing our clothes outside. I mean, everything was outside, and now we're all inside, but our skin cancer rates are going up. So just,
it's really,
you know,
interesting, isn't it? It seems like the more we fight, you know, the more we're protective in terms of using more and more sunscreen, the worse it gets. We should really wake up and realize maybe the sunscreen's not working, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But it's because of these chemicals in our environment that our own natural system isn't working either, so we're really stuck, you know?
Right. So we were talking about the brain chemicals, serotonin, dopamine, these things, the precursors of which are made by the bacteria in the gut. But let's talk a little more about the brain. Those neurotransmitters, they work in the gut, but they also work in the brain. Mm-hmm. So touch on... the pineal gland is where I'm going to. When sunlight comes in through the eyeballs, through the optic nerve, the pineal gland gets saturated with the sunlight. So talk a little bit about the pineal gland and sunlight and sulfated melatonin and that sort of thing.
Yes, it's really fascinating, actually. The pineal gland picks up the sunlight, and just like the skin, it produces sulfate in response to sunlight. And then it decorates, the cells in the pineal gland build up a buffer of sulfate during the daylight hours, and then in the evening they produce the melatonin, and then they take those sulfate molecules that they produce during the day and they attach it to the melatonin and ship it out into the cerebral spinal fluid, so that at night when you sleep, that those melatonin molecules that are released by the pineal gland are carrying sulfate and delivering it to the neurons in the brain, which is essential in order for them to be able to clear the garbage. So while you're sleeping, you clear the garbage. The brain really works hard to clean up all the debris of living during that previous day, during the night while you sleep. Mm-hmm. And it's really important to get that debris cleared up because, you know, for example, with Alzheimer's disease, you've got this big buildup of amyloid beta plaque,
right,
which is basically cellular debris that you didn't break down, you know. And so if you have sulfate deficiency, you can't clear it. You can't clear the plaque, and that's how you can end up with Alzheimer's
disease. And does it also, Doctor, a text coming in, so those who think, well, I'm just going to wear some, you know, some sunglasses, or maybe I'll get the real high-speed polarized sunglasses to really block out the sun, not a great idea. You probably want to have some sunlight getting into the eyeball, so to speak, or what?
I love sunlight exposure to the eyes, and I really feel upset when I see a little two-year-old with sunglasses. It's just such a crime. Because, you know, it's really important for the children because they're building up their sulfur supply, their sulfate supply in the early years of life. That's when you really have to build it up. And you've got to get a good base in order to be healthy. And when you're putting sunglasses on that child, you're preventing their brain from getting adequate sunlight to produce the sulfate that's needed to clear the cellular debris. That can be a step towards autism, in my opinion.
Wow.
Well, and now that you've mentioned that, I did want to go to the autism subject matter because you're kind of well known for that prediction you talked about early in the show. You originally predicted by 2025, 50% of the kids would be on the autism spectrum. You said you reanalyzed the data and have pushed that out.
Yeah, originally I just said by the quarter century mark, kind of making a rough ballpark, but then I actually decided I better do the math because I was just kind of ballparking it with my eye, and then I actually did the physical calculation, and it turns out to be 2032. So, yeah, we have 7 more years before this crisis happens. But
right. It
is going to be an utter catastrophe.
Yeah, and for those that don't know or haven't seen any of my lectures in person, I put up a graph during my lecture and show this autism rate of rise. Back when I was born in 1974, it was about 1 in 5,000. But when you talk to my professors in medical school at UT Houston, when they talk about their training, they talk about they've never even saw it or heard of it. There's one adolescent psychiatrist whose practice now is full of autism, but when he was training in the 50s, he'd never even heard of it. He read about it in a book, I think. And the rate of rise is just exponential from 1 in 5,000, you know, 40 years ago. I think the latest number I saw was something like 1 in 48 or so. And these are CDC
really
numbers.
Scary.
These
it's
aren't.
Just really frightening.
Yeah, so there's obviously something going on. So exponential rise means this curve is just skyrocketing almost straight up now. It's not this gradual.
It's going to get really scary if it continues to be exponential. At some point, it's going to have to level off because the exponential rise can't go on forever. You'll get up to 100%, and then you're just going to get, you know, at your top out.
Right.
So it will slow down at some point. Exactly when, I don't know. But clearly, we're in a crisis, and now we've got that first wave of autistic kids are becoming adults, and all of a sudden, the states are scrambling to find adult services for these autistic people.
Right.
It's really strange that, you know, we call it a childhood disease. We don't seem to be bothered by the fact that adults don't have it right now. You know, 30-40 year olds, there's very little of it.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids are not outgrowing it, so we're going to have, you know, 1-2% of the population 30 year old with autism, which is going to be a really big burden to have all those adults with their parents aging out, nobody to take care of them. I mean, it's really frightening to think about that.
Well, and like you mentioned earlier, the Alzheimer's rates are going up or skyrocketing,
exactly
too.
So the
parents are going to be getting Alzheimer's and the kids are
going to
be autism.
I know. The Alzheimer's parent trying to take care of the autistic child, that's going to be really fun.
Yeah. Well, in your estimation, Dr. Sinef, people ask me all the time, so what's causing this? And it's multifactorial. There's lots of different things causing it. I think there's probably some things that are higher on the list is more correlated or more causative than others. But what's your opinion on the cause of autism?
I think glyphosate is number one. I have almost no doubt at this point. It's number one. It's the most important factor in the epidemic. Number two, I would say, is the vaccines. And the vaccines are working together with the glyphosate to cause harm. And worse than that, there's glyphosate in the vaccines, which is incredibly terrifying to me.
Wow. Yeah, that's what people don't realize with the vaccines. It's not just the viral particle or the bacterial particle. I mean, the general thought of a vaccine, the original, like smallpox, you take a little bit of pus from that germ and you inoculate it in the skin so your body sees a little bit of it and makes antibodies to it. So now you're prepared for the next time you get exposed to it and your immune system will be ready. You know, that's a good thought in theory. But then when you practically apply that, what's actually in the vaccine? There's a little bit of viral particle, and then there's 30 other things, including the heavy metals like aluminum or mercury, the Roundup, all these other things. So you've really got to look at the totality of what's in that vaccine and what all those different ingredients could possibly do, because we forget about synergy. Maybe aluminum all by itself is neurotoxic, but then when you put it with something else, when you combine it with another neurotoxin, then the synergistic effect is multiplied or amplified even more. So talk about some of those things that are in the vaccine, like the aluminum.
Yeah, but the aluminum was really what I zeroed in on first. When I first started looking into autism, which was 10 years ago, the first thing I looked into was the vaccines, and then I looked into the aluminum in the vaccines, because aluminum is definitely a neurotoxin. And what the thing is that if the child already has a leaky brain barrier, then the vaccine becomes much more toxic than if they don't.
What causes leaky brain?
Well, so that's something that can definitely be caused by glyphosate, according to my research. Glyphosate disrupts the barrier, so it makes the gut leaky, and then it makes the brain leaky. Leaky gut leads to leaky brain.
Right.
And there's papers that have written about that. So if the child's been eating food that's contaminated with glyphosate, and then they get a vaccine, and their brain is leaky, then the aluminum in the vaccine will go into the brain. The macrophages will actually take it up and carry it into the brain.
Wow.
And deliver it there. And then aluminum is incredibly toxic in the brain. There's many, many papers written about aluminum toxicity in the brain. There's no question.
Yeah. Well, and
there's glutamate also in the vaccines. MMR. So I zeroed in on MMR early on, and I eventually found out that my MMR was linked to autism in the vaccine database. There's a vaccine adverse event reporting system,
mm-hmm,
maintained by the FDA. And I was surprised to see MMR being correlated with autism in the database, because MMR doesn't contain aluminum and doesn't contain mercury. So I would have thought that one would have been okay, you know, in my previous impression of what would be causal in the vaccines. I was thinking of the aluminum and the mercury, the toxic metals.
Mm-hmm.
But the MMR does contain glutamate, and glutamate is also a neurotoxin. And again, if you have a leaky brain barrier, then the glutamate can get into the brain. But what's really bad, it was what I've been discovering lately, which is that the MMR contains, as a contaminant, it contains glyphosate. And Anthony Samso has measured several different samples of MMR and found glyphosate in all of the ones that he tested. And high levels, not high, but higher than all the other vaccines. The vaccines have small amounts of glyphosate, but when you're injecting it directly into the body, instead of having it come through the digestive system, 100% of it gets past the barriers, you know.
Yeah.
And it's in a concentrated dosage. And the macrophages come in because of the setup with the vaccine, with the antigen, you know, from the virus. It draws the macrophages in, and they're going to take up that glyphosate along with the glutamate. And the glutamate and the glyphosate will work together to excite NMDA receptors in the brain and burn out the neurons. So that's one way in which MMR could be causing autism.
Wow.
So let me ask this, since we're getting short on time here, and we got a caller. We'll get to the call in just a second. But what can, you know, people listening today saying, gee whiz, what can I do as a preventative to maybe reduce the exposure to this kind of stuff? I mean, what can I, is there a magic supplement out there? I mean, what can we do to say, okay, we've got to reduce our exposure to these toxins, especially for our children who are, I mean, for the babies that are really prone to become autistic, but even for us adults that maybe, you know, me, I'm sitting here in my 40s and I've been exposed to this for a long time. But, you know, what can I do to
limit it? Well, of course,
the
most important thing to do is to switch to an organic diet. Luckily, in this country, we have certified organic. It's a pretty good label, you know, because you cannot use glyphosate and still get certification for organic. You can't use it on your crop. And so, and it's fairly well available, I think, in most parts of the country. And if not, you can order it now over the web, you know, from things like Thrive Market. Thrive Market offers a variety of foods that are certified organic. And it's booming in Costco, for example. Costco has really a growing section of certified organic foods more and more every day. I'm very excited about that. Organic, in fact, is growing exponentially, in step with the exponential rise in autism and glyphosate. So I think because people are getting sick and they're switching to organic and they're feeling better, it's become a movement. And I think that's the most important thing you can do is to switch to an organic diet. Also interesting is that there's a microbe called Acetobacter, which is found in vinegar, like apple cider vinegar or sauerkraut, mm-hmm. fermented foods. And that microbe is among the very few microbes that can actually metabolize glyphosate. They can completely break it down into usable resources.
Wow.
It's quite remarkable.
Wow. Apple
there aren't
cider
any microbes
vinegar.
That can do that.
I encourage.
Now, that's probably a good thing to use in the morning, too, for weight loss. I've heard to use apples at one drink of that with some, you know, cumin and well, you know.
Well, and I would recommend a good brand like Bragg's or something.
Exactly,
Bragg's
organic. Yeah, that's the one you want to do.
Yeah, right,
to
right.
Natural. You have to have a live culture.
Yeah,
well, that's good. So have a glass of that a day, perhaps.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's really great that it can do that. And of course, it's also helping with the probiotics because the probiotics in general are also good. So eating fermented foods is really encouraged to help to renew the gut microbes because they're getting destroyed by the glyphosate. The beneficial microbes are getting hurt.
We have it, huh?
Well, I'm going to do it.
And Dr. Seneff, have you researched any, it's kind of a new product, the lignite extracts, Dr. Zach Bush, and it closes
yes.
the tight junctions and kind of protects against glyphosate?
Absolutely. I talked with him extensively, probably over an hour one-on-one when we were at a conference together and I heard his talk, and I'm very excited about his product. And I think, in general, things that organic matter from the soil, like fulvic acid and humic acid and bentonite clay, those are all helpful for clearing the glyphosate out of the gut. And he's reported really exciting results with his product. And he's also shown that glyphosate disrupts the gut barrier. Well, we have so many issues. All of a sudden, we're really excited about the gut microbiome and all that it does for us. That's because it's not working. You know, these days you get so many papers coming out. I'm delighted to see all these papers that are being published about the gut microbiome, and we're figuring out how to really analyze it deeply and figure out its correlations with different diseases. You know, lots of stuff is coming out. But we're doing this because we're seeing that it's broken, and it's broken because it's being exposed chronically to glyphosate.
Yeah.
We have an epidemic, and that's, people are not yet, most people are not connecting it to the glyphosate. I keep hoping that's going to happen,
Well, let's take a quick call right quick. Good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. What a wonderful, wonderful show. I really enjoyed. I won't take up your time, but my grandmother was born in 1874, and she knew all the old-fashioned Indian-type products of what made this better or that better. I never remember a day in her life that she was ever sick.
Yeah.
And I have to remember that they made their own clothes and wore bonnets and gloves, and, there wasn't any their skin was not exposed to direct sunlight like, we all wear cooler clothes nowadays than what grandmother did.
Well, she was exposed to many fewer
chemicals. 100 years ago, is a different lifestyle, but they didn't have poisons to put on their fruits and vegetables.
That's
exactly. 100 years ago, everybody was eating organic before there was even the word and label organic. Our soil was nutrient dense. I've shown in my lecture how the minerals are just totally depleted out of our soil now. So it's a totally different environment, and that's what we're talking about. These diseases are rising exponentially, so it can't be genetics because it's too fast of a rise in a short period of time. So you've got to look at the environment, and 100 years ago, the environment was much more pristine.
They didn't have aluminum floating around. Even in aluminum in underarm deodorant.
Yeah.
Now I use Old Spice because they don't. That's the only one out there that doesn't use aluminum in their underarm deodorant.
Well, and a lot of these they pass through the placenta and they pass through breast milk. We didn't get to mention glyphosate in the breast milk. Even there's some studies that show pregnant moms the urine in the breast milk too. So it's everywhere. So going with the organic diet, like Dr. Seneff mentioned, is essential. I mean, it's absolutely key. And one thing I want to touch on too, the barrier we keep talking about, the gut barrier and the brain barrier. So the listeners who are new, the inside of the gut really is still the outside world. So you need to have this impermeable layer where things can just absorb through certain channels, but glyphosate blows that wide open. And then there's a special barrier in the blood vessels leading to the brain to protect the brain, and that's blown wide open. And that brain barrier isn't fully developed till day of life 8, and most babies are getting the hepatitis shot on the first day of life, which, by the way, there's 250 micrograms of aluminum in that shot. And even the EPA itself says the safest level is 5 micrograms per kilo. So we're talking your chunkiest baby at 10 pounds, 11 pounds would be, 5 kilos, so 5 times 5 is 25. That'd be the upper limit of aluminum that you could get and still be safe according to EPA, and we're given 250 on the first day of life before the blood-brain barrier is even made. It's just outrageous what's going on. So, anyways, Dr. Seneff, we got about 2 minutes left, so I want to kind of wrap it up. You mentioned organic diet, ways to protect ourselves and keep ourselves healthy.
Also, walking barefoot on the beach in the water for grounding. Grounding is really great for boosting the electrical supply to the body.
Okay, so be outside, get some sunlight, get your feet to the earth, eat organic. And then as far as foods.
And then bone broth and organic, of course, So grass-fed beef, bones, cook it for a long time, slow cook, bone broth.
Okay.
Lots of minerals out of that. Minerals are really important. Eating mineral-dense foods, so seafood, for example, is very healthy, and eggs, organic eggs.
Good.
And foods that have a high nutrient density.
Right. Now, if you are finding the organic food, are there ones that are more sulfur-rich, if the soil has it, if it's organic and there's no glyphosate on it?
Well, garlic and onions are really good sources of sulfur, and also cruciferous vegetables, broccoli and cauliflower, and cabbage, Brussels sprouts. Those are all good sources of sulfur as in the vegetable compartment. Cheese is also a good source, and as I said, the seafood and the eggs and also meat, but everything organic, grass-fed, highest quality eggs you can find. Always spend the extra money, get the high quality. It will be worth it.
No doubt. And if you're running short on money, you just fast every now and then to save some money.
There you go. Eat less. Well, you'll eat less because you won't get fat without the glyphosate. Glyphosate is causing our obesity epidemic.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable what this glyphosate is doing. Well, we've got to wrap it up. We're going to have you back, Dr. Sniff. This hour flew by. That it seems like there's so many more questions I have for you. My listeners and my patients are so thankful to have you on to learn, to get this knowledge. Knowledge is power, and we're dying from lack of knowledge. But I also want to say thank you for all your research, all the effort. It seems like so many scientists, and I understand why, but maybe the research dollars are coming from somewhere that's influenced by big corporations, so they can't just come right out against glyphosate or vaccines or whatever. They can't just, you know, honestly say what the data shows. They have to bury their data, or it's not even published. So, you know, you're putting your reputation out there. Your whole career is kind of on the line, but you have integrity and honesty, and you're not scared to just call it like it is and put it out. What your data shows, you're willing to put it out there, and you're willing to keep looking and looking and looking, no matter what the personal consequences may be. So thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I think that's about it, Wade, unless you had anything.
No, I appreciate Dr. Sniff being with us on the show. We'll definitely have you back. We appreciate it. And you have a wonderful rest of the week.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
You've been listening to You're the Cure with Dr. Ben Edwards, of course, brought to you by Veritas Medical, and, of course, our sponsors of the program, Vitamins Plus, Haddock Chiropractic, and Natural Health Market as well. Get by those establishments, and they will fix you up as well. But Dr. Edwards, we appreciate it. We'll see you back here next Monday on the show. Stick around now. Unconfused coming up next right here on AM 580.